Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you are in the world. Welcome back to the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt. It's been a momentous time in Canada in the last 48 hours. Justin Trudeau has been elected as the Prime Minister of Canada, and I believe, as do many patriots around the world, that this is a very bad move for Canada. Now, Harper's Canada, the last Prime Minister, was the last outpost, the last place where government was reasonably sane and was resisting the jihad threat. They were resisting Islamization. Harper was resisting the halal scam. But now, Justin Trudeau, who is a wholly owned and operated subsidiary of Islamic supremacists, has taken power. With Justin Trudeau at the helm, we can be sure that he will undo all the good that Harper has done to resist the growing tide of Islamization. Poor, poor Canada. The last bastion has almost gone. But here in Australia, despite the attempts by Turncoat Turnbull to do the same thing, I know a lot of Australians are resisting and they don't like what Turnbull has done to our democracy, or so-called democracy. There is a growing tide of resentment. And with that resentment is coming a determination to change things. Now, I'll be talking about how we can do this later on. But right now, I'd like to play you a song, which I think is rather appropriate. It's called Deadly Animals. And this song was recorded as part of an Australian tourism promotion, Come to Australia. I'm pretty sure most people wouldn't come if they listened to this song.
Thanks very much. Well, the Australian Tourist Commission has asked us to come up with a song that we could perform overseas, a song to help bring the tourists back to Australia. That's right, so we focused on the wonderful wildlife and the fabulous fauna that Australia has to offer.
Red-backed funnel web, blue ringed octopus, taipan, tiger snake, adderbox, jellyfish, stonefish, and the poison thing that lives in a shell that spikes you when you pick it up. Come to Australia, you might accidentally get killed. Your life's constantly under threat. Have you been bitten yet? You've only got 3 minutes left before a massive coronary breakdown. Red-backed funnel web, blue-ringed octopus, taipan, tiger snake, adderbox, jellyfish, big shark, just waiting for you to go swimming at Bondi Beach. Come on! Come to Australia, you might accidentally get killed. Your blood is bound to be spilled, with fear your pants will be filled, because you might accidentally get killed.
I'd like to welcome my special guest today, Monica Evers. As ever, she's always got a lot to say and a very lot of interesting stuff to say, I must add. Monica, why don't you tell me what you want to talk about today, because I know you've got a few things that you want to discuss.
I want to talk about the shuffling of the brands that is going on at the moment in the Patriot movement and the effect that Sunday night had. But there's been some other really interesting things behind the scenes that I think your listeners might have some interest in. And I think it brings a big question as to what we have to do as a community with this intimidation that is going on now of our media. So
all right.
I don't know where you want to start.
Well, before we launch into that, would you mind if we just talk briefly about what's happened overnight in Canada, or the last 24 hours or so? Justin Trudeau just got elected as the Prime Minister. Personally, I believe that this is a terrible, terrible thing to happen to Canada, but I'd like your take on it.
Well, we were warned about this with Lord Monckton. He said that there were two countries that were holding out from attending the UN climate summit, and he said it was Canada and Abbott, and he actually didn't know how they were going to get rid of Abbott. He already forecast that Canada would have a change of Prime Minister at the election, and we were all surprised to see Abbott get changed over for a pro-friendly UN in Turnbull. So we've now seen Lord Monckton, who's the person that's saying that the climate control, this whole climate warming, he's saying it's a load of rubbish. So many other scientists. So, you know, like, we have to start thinking that he was right. He was spot on the money.
Yes, certainly was.
And that is because now we have every country thumbs up to signing on to this new climate change agenda, which is another UN agenda.
Yes. What do you think would be the result of signing this climate change agreement? It sounds innocuous. What do you think is going to happen?
There's a lot of... If you look at all the UN agendas, and they've been going since, what, 92, they have been in globalisation. They're shifting the power base from the country to a corporate world government. I can't use that sound because it sounds like you're in a conspiracy theory. But if you look at, say, for example, today, Switzerland, the anti-immigration party got up. And already in the news reports, they're saying, well, you know, they've got some agreements that they have to honour with the UN and how they're going to do this. Do you know what I mean? Now, what the UN is doing is undermining democracy in every country. So it's saying the people that are sitting around that table, who we've not elected, by the way, to go to the UN, are now controlling who we put in power and our wants and wishes in our individual countries. And I think that's a problem, because what we've got is a socialist-backed United Nations, which sounds really good on the surface, but underneath it all, it's actually undermining the democracy of we, the people who we're electing in our country. Am I a serious problem with a foreign power deciding what's good for Australia?
So do I. So much so that I've been talking to quite a few people around town and around the country and even overseas, and there is a general feeling that this cannot be sustained. And I've even had people talking about coups, you know, like a people's coup. I don't want to do it either, and I think there are other ways around it, but when you start hearing people say that, you know there is something seriously wrong with our democracy. We've never had a coup before in Australia until Gillard knifed Rudd in the back. And since then, we've had another coup, putting Turncoat into power. This is unprecedented. Never happened before.
Yeah, and I'd like to see how much the UN's involved in this.
They're very involved.
I know, and that's where we've got to look. Who are the players? I mean, that's what I spend a lot of the time when I've been looking into the whole Islamic Patriot movement. I've been going, who are the power brokers? Who are the people that are actually standing to benefit? And what are the real issues? And it's not superficially what you think it is.
No.
There are bigger, deeper roots that are going on.
Yes, and indeed.
Yeah.
All right, look, I think we take a quick break, and then when we come back, let's talk more about what's been going on here in Australia. I'd like to play a song by The Zombies, I think, which is very appropriate, Time of the Season.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In the dark, give it to me easy, and let me try with pleasure hands, take you in this time. What's your name?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Is he rich like me? Has he taken
any time
to show you what you need to live?
You're off the air now. Are you listening?
Yes.
Evers, a social. What do you call yourself again?
A culturalist.
A culturalist. That's right. And Monica is here to talk to me today about a variety of issues. You were going to talk today about the recent rallies in Bendigo and the ramifications of that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, sure. I wasn't actually planning to go to the rally, but I got a call from Danny Nalia, and just as a local Bendigonian, he asked me if I wouldn't mind helping him and his team find a place to park and, you know, help him with the logistics, which it was fine. I really enjoyed doing that. However, I ended up going to the actual rally, and I think what was the most interesting thing, let me give you what really happened.
Okay, before you do that, just some of our listeners may not know who Danny Nalia is, so perhaps you can explain who that is first.
Oh, okay. Danny Nalia is Rise Up Australia Party. Mm-hmm. He is a person who has lived under Sharia law in Saudi Arabia. He is also the person that fought against the Islamic Council of the Victoria, who had him up on hate speech charges because he chose to I think it was just after the Lint Cafe siege. He's a pastor of a congregation, and he was holding a conference in which he was going to enlighten people on why terrorism exists as part of Islam. And he was quoting from the Quran, and there were plants in the audience, and they reported him, and he ended up on hate speech charges, which took him 6 years to speak and $600,000. So we're talking about somebody who actually created a precedent for free speech in Australia. And he has been, he formed the Rise Up Australia Party because he realised that this push of Islam to bring in their blasphemy laws and stop us as a in the West from speaking about Islam or criticizing it. And he felt that that was his duty to stop that in Australia. So, you know, he's a pretty amazing person when you get to know his legacy. After he defeated, after he basically beat the hate speech charge and got the freedom to say and have conversations about Islam, he was invited to address the Congress in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was invited to address the UK Parliament. And in both those matters, he was able to bring his knowledge. And they changed the laws subsequently to make sure that the same blasphemy laws, if you like, didn't take hold in their nation. So if you think about from a freedom of speech perspective, he's huge.
Mm.
He's huge, but nobody thinks about him.
No.
So what he's been doing, Patriot Movement, is like we've reclaimed first in Melbourne, asked him if he would come and speak at our rallies. And he absolutely, he was there, even though it was quite violent from the counter-rally perspective.
Mm.
And he was up in Bendigo. He actually came to the Bendigo rally. And so he rang me. He knew that I was I lived in Bendigo, and so he asked if I would just help him out with some digest, which I was happy to do.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what happened in Bendigo then.
They met at the same place where the Red Ribbon Rebellion began. It's up near a cluster of churches. And
okay,
they
this
were,
way?
This is UPS.
Okay.
United States. So Blair Cottrell and also Great Aussie Patriot were both there. And when they... I've got some really interesting things to tell you. When they arrived, of course, they were slapped, and that's how I knew that they'd arrived. But you know when the ABC van, the ABC news van arrived? They arrived to boo. The crowd actually booed them. That is how they're regarded now.
Good.
They're no longer the Australian media. They're now the media that is only for a certain section of Australia. And I think that's a problem. That is a problem for the ABC.
It's
a brand problem.
It's a problem for everybody. They're supposed to be our public broadcaster.
I'm not anymore. And I found that... When have you ever heard of any media station being booed? Ever? In your entire existence? Never.
No,
never, ever. Or you know, you sort of let them go, but never booed. And I felt from a brand perspective, because you know me, I'm just that's the way I look. They're in trouble. ABC is in serious trouble with Australian people. So that was, I found that worth underlining. They met, they walked not very far away, maybe 800 metres to the park, and went down the hill. It was quite, there would be between, for me, I would say between 600 and 800 in that walk.
Wow.
So, and I also, when we got there, Rosamund Park.
Just one moment, if you wouldn't mind. When you say 600 or 800, were they local Bendigo residents or were they just UPF?
A mixture. I knew quite a few people, but I'm not a, a three-generation Bendigo person. I do believe
to be recognised, have you?
Yeah, three generations in the grave. You know, it's one of those. And I've only sort of made 6 or 8 years, but no, I don't even count. However, I recognise quite a few people. So, and I've had locals coming up to me, so I know that there was a fair few locals. I know that from the first rally, I know somebody else, a close friend that went, who was, she said that she recognised at least 70 to 80%. When they held the vote of who's a local, most of the people put up their hands. So, you know, I'd say they were mainly locals.
Good.
And I think the numbers grew. I know eventually they said there was about 1,000 people. I think that's probably close to where it went. But I did take photos because I heard the counter rally come, and I was very interested to see who they were and how busy they were. There's a canal that cuts off Roslyn Park from the main street, and they were on the other side of the canal, and they were also fenced in. So there was two fences between. There's no way they could come across. And the police had two police lines, so they wouldn't let me take photos of them. So my photos are you know, from a fair way away. But if there was 100, I would go he. There was no, they were vocal until Danny Nalia spoke, and within 5 minutes of him speaking, they had gone. It was a waste of space from them. And if that was the, but it means that they were outnumbered. I don't know, 9 times. And I think that's the other underline. And Mitch reported in the news. They made it sound like there was clashes. They made it sound like there were, you know, it was another very edgy face-off. But we ignored them. But they were told, in fact, Blair got on the rotunda, and he basically said, look, leave my line, ignore them. And literally everyone just turned their back on them and left it to the police. The police had such a tough time that half of them were underneath the trees, out in the shade, just cooling off, because they'd been fighting fires. So, you know, a lot of them were tired. But to their credit, there was nothing. And, yeah, the last thing, from my understanding, because I left with, because I was the person that was go-between with Danny Nali's group, I left before the end, but my understanding, the feedback I got was they even got the people to clean up after them. Mm-hmm. So this was a typical Australian, good, well-behaved, I still say rousing because we are passionate people. Mm. It was a good rally. It was a good rally. The speakers were good. Scott Morland was good. I really enjoyed what he had to say. Mm. Blair Cottrell, he was taking a very, he reminded me of, and I don't mean this to be disparaging, but I kind of felt like I was at a Hitler rally, you know, very nationalistic and very strong, and you know, we will die for our country and that kind of thing. And it was rousing. I could see why he's now considered the head of UPF. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So it was interesting to watch.
Okay, let's take a break. Well, let's take a quick break now, and when we come back after listening to Mighty Mo, let's talk about the results of the rallies and also the fallout from that for UPF, because I believe there was quite because I believe that UPF leadership has become quite fragmented since then. Is that right?
I think it's been fragmenting. Can I say it's been fragmenting for a while, but they probably kept it hidden. I think they're keeping a very straight face, but I know the fragmentation's been going on for a while.
Okay. All right, let's talk about that after the break. And here's Mighty Mo.
Allahu Akbar.
When we left Mighty Mo last time, he had addressed his pitiful army of men, telling them that they must not fear death, because Allah promised an unending supply of 72 virgins for eternity. Oh, you have to understand we're dealing with uneducated 7th century dune dwellers, dear listeners. Anyway, Mighty Mo's army has arrived at Badra, the place they were going to intercept the rich caravan they planned to rob, only to find that they had been warned and slipped away safely. Let's join Mighty Mo and his band of merry men to see what happens next.
Ah, Mighty Mo, woe is we. Someone has warned the caravan of our approach, and they have fled to the safety of Mecca. Whatever shall we do now?
Don't be so silly, Osama bin Laina. How do you know this?
Look yonder. Do you see that dark patch of ground over there?
Why, yes. It looks like the grass has all died.
Ah, Mighty Mo, sometimes you can be so blind. That is not dead grass. We are in the desert. There is no grass here!
Oh, yes. Well, what is it?
Verily I say unto you, O mighty Mo, it is an army of Meccans. My spies have returned to tell me that the Meccans have raised a huge army because you have dared to raid a caravan in the sacred month. The Quraysh are extremely upset with you.
Oh, fear not. We will beat that rabble because we have Allah on our side. And Allah has revealed all in a dream to me.
Oh, no, not another damn dreamer. What?
What did you say?
Oh, nothing. Oh, great and fearsome mighty Moe. I was just wondering about your dream.
I told you already that Allah has promised 72 virgins to any man who dies in battle. He calls it jihad. There is no need to fear death any longer, Osama bin Laden. Assemble the men. Go without now. Men, listen to me. I have wonderful news today. Some of you will meet 72 virgins and spend eternity with them in heaven.
Mighty Mouse, it is I, Abdallah al-Dawud.
What is it you want, Abdallah?
Ah, Mighty Mouse, I have something here that will help.
What is that, Abdallah al-Dawud?
Why, I found an old lamp the other day in the desert, and a genie appeared when I rubbed it.
Yes? And what did the genie say?
He only gave me one wish, so I asked to be the richest man in the world.
So, you still look poor and ragged to me. What happened?
It was a genie from Mecca. You know what those Meccans are like, oh mighty Mo. Sneakier than the Jews. Instead of giving me the riches I asked for, he gave me a map and told me to follow it to my riches. Here it is.
What sort of a trick is this, Abdallah? It's just a sheet of sandpaper.
Well, yes. And isn't this the Arabian Desert? Osama! Off with his head!
Osama, pick up the pieces of this fool and dump them in the ravine.
Come, men! It's time to show the Meccans that Allah is on our side! Onwards to battle!
We'll leave Mighty Mo and his band of merry murderers until next time, listeners. Make sure you tune in to listen once more to the adventures of
Mighty Mo! Well, that was Mighty Mo, and this is the Restore Australia radio show with your host, Mike Holt, and my special guest today is Monica Evers from Bendigo. Monica, you were just talking before about the UPF rally there just recently. Can you tell us a little bit now about what's been going on with the UPF leadership?
I think it was really obvious from the day that Blair Cottrell has taken over from the GAP. To understand that there were the three of them really started. It was Neil Erickson, Blair Cottrell and Great Aussie Patriot, so and what, they...
Maybe you should clarify for our listeners what happened then, because I'm still not quite sure. So when you talk about afterwards, are you talking about after the rally?
Oh, how do you mean, when I said after?
Well, let's start at the beginning.
Are you talking...
UPF is an offshoot of the Reclaim Australia rally. Is that correct?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Great Aussie Patriot was the ambassador for Reclaim. Reclaim started, they needed a front, and that was all explained on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a front person. They asked if Sherman Burgess would be that front person because the mum who's behind it, Catherine Brennan, she wanted to stay hidden. But she was really passionate, and Sherman said, yes, look, I'll gladly make videos and support you. So that was really the arrangement. And then they, after the first rally, there was a real shift within Reclaim. Catherine was very much a mum's and dad's person. She wanted peaceful but protest, you know, like it was the heart of Australia, whereas Great Aussie Patriot, and there were others that were aligning with him.
Mm.
They wanted to take Reclaim Australia and make it into UPF, sure. You know, to make it into a militant organisation. And Catherine had a problem with that. From a brand perspective, because I was in a position of consulting to them, I was with Catherine, and I felt that the mums and dads of Australia needed a voice. But I felt as though UPF also needed to that whole militant side needed to be there too. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't saying that one was bad. I'm just saying that I was saying that Reclaim really was the people's voice.
That's right.
And both are required, like if you needed both. So that what happened was Blair Cottrell and Neil Erickson and a few others, I have to say, there was I think about four or five founding people, decided to create UPF to take on that militant. And that, and then there was this massive, you know, announcement of Gap leaving Reclaim, and he put out a few videos, and they targeted me a little bit, which is not right. That wasn't fair, but that's what they do.
That's what he does. He's targeted me as well, and again, it was unfair because I didn't even know the man. But
I know he doesn't know me.
Yeah.
In fact, he still doesn't recognise me when I go to rallies. He still doesn't know who I am. I find that all very funny, but, it just is.
Mm.
They then formed UPF, and that's when they had the first Melbourne rally. Then they've, you know, that's when they'd come up to Bendigo, and now they're building their brand based on Bendigo.
Mm.
I notice even now, like after the Saturday, I want to talk about the Saturday night program, the Sunday night program, because that's really, that's shifted the goalpost. Can I go into that?
Yep, sure.
Okay, Sunday night, everyone, I think, was really wanting to know whether the media was going to take a biased left-wing view, whether they were just going to do, for the first time, maybe, hopefully, a real interview that showed the truth about the movement. And to their credit, Channel 7 actually showed a really good, as best as they could, unbiased view of Reclaim Australia. I think the people that they got, the interviews that they got, showed the people to be who they really are, mums and dads, very concerned, but also very aware of what is ahead of Australia. The research side, there was not a lot said about Islam, and understand now, from what I heard over, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but the media that were covering the 15-year-old that did the shooting, there were threats made to some of the media houses by Islam,
I put up a post about that this morning on my Facebook page.
Oh, did you? Okay. There's been terrorist threats aimed at news houses.
Yep.
And this has been, so Channel 7, when they aired the, like, unbiased view of Reclaim, were very fearful of the repercussions that their media would get, their media house would get from the Islamic community. Now, I'm not going to go there for a moment. The poll that happened after showed 77%. By about 9:30, when the poll was going, it was up around about 77%.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, it took. I know. It allowed multiple votings, and two had some intel that told us that there were two Apple computers that logged on all night and voted the other way.
Yeah.
And that, so the whole poll was skewed. Channel 7, and this is, I have to say, allegedly, I'm going to underline this, allegedly, stated that they had a duty of care to their staff and they had to take matters into their own hands. So all we can say is, what I surmised from that they were concerned about their duty of care was that the true result happened and then it had to be changed for the safety of their staff.
All right, I'd like to
now
comment on that for a moment, if you don't mind. You know, you mentioned here
we have to.
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned here the fear.
Yes.
These people are afraid of Islam. But what they don't really understand is Islam is an ideology that is based on thuggery and fear and intimidation, and they're all cowards. People are cowards. They don't attack you one face on face, you know. They attack either in groups or they attack from the shadows. They never come out and face you face to face. And we cannot afford to let them put that fear into us. Our media has to harden up, you know. Let's deliver some cement to them and let them eat that, because if we keep on giving in, they will keep on taking and taking and taking until one day we will turn around and say, what happened to our country? Where did it go? We cannot do that. And I will never, ever, and I say this many times, I will never, ever bow to Islam. I know what Islam is. I've lived in Islamic countries. I've traveled through them. I've seen how they behave. I've even had Islamic friends. And to be honest with you, every time I shook hands with my Islamic friends, I counted my fingers afterwards because I never trusted them. I never could. Even though they were supposed to be my friends, I had read the Quran by then and I knew what it was all about. And they are not allowed to be friends with infidels unless they are working to convert us to Islam. And these guys who were so supposedly my friends, that's exactly what they were trying to do. So it's time our media realise that they have to pick a side. And it has to be our side, the side of Australia. And if they don't do that, then they are going to find themselves not only marginalised, they will lose their jobs, they will lose everything. Because if Islam comes in, that'll be the end of it. There'll be no more free press. And they will be killed. It happens all the time in Islamic countries. Anyway, that's my little rant, but I wanted to get that in because otherwise people don't understand.
No, I want to add a little underline to that. For us to live in a democracy, for us to engage in a democracy, we require a free press. Like how on earth is the world or fellow Australians going to hear the other side if the press are only going to deliver political correctness or one side of the story for fear of retribution?
Yeah.
Like, if the women in there, if they're worried about the women, then get the women out. It's like the same as the Israeli army. You know, like, they don't go front line because the men will want to protect them, so put them back. If that's going to be the case, if you're thinking first of your people rather than reporting the truth, you're in the wrong industry.
That's right.
You know, this is an industry of truth. It's tough. Like, the people that, like, I've spoken to off the record, because I don't speak a lot to the media, but I do speak off the record to them. And I remember talking recently to one of our local journalists, and I said, is this what you went to media school to do, to be a spokesperson for powers that be around you instead of speaking the truth? And the person responded and said, no, that's not what I went to school for. And I really genuinely believe that journalists are being told, you've got to give me two stories, they're too busy, they're not able to do the responsible journalism that democracy requires.
Yeah, it's all down to money these days.
Well, it's money and it's all the other interests. And also, I believe that if the journalists had the opportunity to take the time and do the research, they would uncover. I mean, how do we learn about all the things that used to happen in Saudi Arabia? Intrepid investigative journalists would go risking their lives and bring it out to the West, and we would be able then to take it in through our websites to the general population. These were the real heroes. The journalists for us, you know, are heroes, but not local media. Local media has somehow lost their way. They're no longer the very necessary arm of a democracy. A democracy requires truth in reporting so that people can make their own minds up. A nanny state, socialism, demands that you hush up, you don't tell the people, they're not smart enough to make their own decisions, and that's dangerous. And that's what we currently have. The media are being compliant. When we had Manus, he was actually saying there were bombs. No media reported the bombs because the police said don't freak out the population. And that's where I go, no, that's wrong. That's wrong, because we should be freaked out, because we should know that this is now on our doorstep, and we need to be made aware of what the ramifications are.
Yeah.
And if we're not being fed the truth, then how can we, as intelligent, common sense, we're known for our wonderful common sense. You know, we call a spade
That's
a
right.
spade. How can we make decisions if our media is working in collusion with the police and the government to hush up stuff? It's wrong.
That's
right. Wrong.
I've got a caller on the line, Richard, who'd like to talk to me about Reclaim Australia. G'day, Richard. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks for coming in and talking to me. You gave me a call because you want to know about Reclaim Australia. Do you think it represents Australian values?
Yes, if it stands for multiculturalism. I believe we all have a right to be here and do our thing.
Yeah. Can you define multiculturalism?
Well, where we can all live together in peace and acceptance of every culture.
Okay. And at this stage in Australia's history, do you think that all cultures that come here are actually integrating and living in peace with us?
Well, I've just done a trip to Sydney, and I've seen a lot of Asians all sticking together and things like that. And I've heard things of Lebanese and the Greeks, they all stick to themselves. But, you know, I think that's something Australia needs to work with.
Yeah, they might stick together and stick with themselves, but at the same time, when they come here, they do integrate. But the Muslims tend to congregate in their own enclaves and they don't integrate. They stick to their own culture. And that's how I define multiculturalism. Multi means many, many cultures. Do we really want many cultures in Australia, or do we want a multi-ethnicity that all feel that they are Australians?
Yeah, well, I'd like to see Australia as one and total acceptance from all parts, from the Muslims and from the Australians, to be as one.
Okay, so given that, do you think that Reclaim Australia stands for that?
I would certainly hope so. If that's what we're aiming for, is to draw everyone together, all the cultures.
Good. So will you be at the Brisbane rally on November 22nd?
I'll be there supporting communication with the Muslims if they're going to cause a problem. I'll be there supporting communication and becoming Australian, not Muslims, not Australians, not Asians or Greeks. We're all as one. That's what we support.
Well, that's what Reclaim Australia stands for too. Okay, thank you very much for calling, Richard.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much, Richard, for calling in. I've got my special guest, Monica Evers, on the microphone with me today. And Monica's been talking about the situation in Bendigo and also the Sunday night program that just aired last week. Monica, tell us about the fallout from that program. What's been going on since then?
Well, I've been in contact with Reclaim Australia, and I can tell you that they grew 14,000 likes overnight. So the general consensus, once people realised who the people were behind the scenes, was they got massive approval. It was something that most of the messages they received were You think like us. You feel like, you know, we never knew you were just like us.
Mm.
And this is how the media has tried to portray everyday mums and dads like Catherine Brennan and Wanda Marsh. They've made them out to be thugs when they're not. They're just concerned parents.
Yeah.
And I think that was bona fide, and I'm really pleased that Channel 7 showed that. What did show up, unfortunately, I suppose, in contrast, was the UPF, because their stand was more militant. So Blair Cottrell showed himself to be more militant, and the same went with Great Aussie Patriot. He came across, and I think that tension that has been in their ranks didn't support, you know, the brands, both brands moving forward. I think from UPF, they only grew 1,000 likes overnight, so the general population has basically said, well, you know, we respond with to what Reclaim is and who they are,
yeah,
and not so much UPF. Although they did, I think they were still reasonably represented by Channel 7. But the darlings were definitely made to be reclaimed. And I noticed that today Sherman Burgess, Great Aussie Patriot, is trying to say that Reclaim is supporting his Cronulla stand. There's no way that they would do that. Reclaim Australia does rallies, and there's no way. So, but because of the improvement in their brands, the guys are now trying to I suppose, steal some of that.
Yeah.
Leverage. I noticed that Blair Cottrell also said that made a video saying that they UPF were there to protect the mums and dads. Well, no, the police are actually there to protect the mums and dads.
I think UPF has lost its reason for being, for a start. Secondly, I don't think they have a clear vision of where they stand. They could have been a force for good.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, I've always envisaged UPF as the group that could go out to a mosque that has been causing trouble and protest outside there, and if necessary, defend themselves if they are attacked. But I don't see UPF attracting the mums and dads of Australia. They're just not their aims are just not compatible with what most people stand for in Australia. Reclaim Australia stands for our Australian values, our Australian way of life, and I'm very proud to say that I've been appointed as an admin to set up the Brisbane Reclaim Australia on November 22nd, and I've been in touch with the officials to start things going, and that's all underway. I'm getting a lot of very helpful support in terms of advice on how to do this from the police. They're prepared to work with us to make sure that the rally is safe, and I will also be having a meeting with the police to discuss ways to ensure our safety. I've seen from Melbourne that the police down there were not very well organised, and they certainly weren't prepared for what went down. Now, I was there, so I saw it myself. I have got a plan of the area where we will be holding the rally in Brisbane, and I will work with the police to try and get the area blocked off from the left-wing socialists. And they are the people causing the trouble. The Muslims are not causing the trouble. And on that note, I'm also talking to Ali Kadri, who is the manager of the Holland Park Mosque in Brisbane. And I've already invited him to come onto this show. In fact, he was supposed to be on today, but he's busy working. So unfortunately, he couldn't make it, but I will be getting him on the show. I want him to tell us the point of view of the more moderate Muslims, what they see is going on in Australia and what they want to do about it. So he'll be on my show and we'll talk about that. But I'm also going to invite him and the people from his mosque and other Muslim communities around Brisbane to come and stand shoulder to shoulder with us at the Reclaim Australia rally. I want to show Australia that we are not the racists and bigots that the socialists keep accusing us of being. We are quite open to talk to the Muslims, and we're even quite open to have them stand with us, provided
that they will also stand up and denounce the troublemakers and the terrorists amongst them. They have to take positive steps, and I'm going to open the door for them to come in and show us what they are going to do about that.
That's great. Can I ask you also, in your interview, there's a site called, a page called the Islamic Mission of Australia, and in it, it talks about Sam Solomon's, he was a Sharia scholar that converted away from Islam, and he has put together what Islam has to look like if it's going to work in a Western society. Right. And he's gone through the various scriptures that are a problem, and he's asking the community to sign a document to say that they're wanting to progress a more moderate form of Islam. Can you ask him to have a look at it and see if there's a problem and where the problem is, why the community won't come forth? Because this document is what UKIP wants to bring into America, into England, and it's also what he tried to get adopted into the EU. So it's not something that you throw away. This is a really heavyweight document, and so I'm going to repeat it again: Islamic Mission of Australia, and it's about moderate Islam. And I'm really that. From my perspective, I'd be fascinated to find out where the glitch is, why they won't address it, or if they will address it.
I think I can tell you already, Monica, the problem that the Muslims face is that Muhammad was a very smart street fighter. And one of the things he realized was that if his so-called religion was going to survive the ages, it had to be immutable. In other words, it could not be changed, and so he brought down an edict saying that the Quran had been dictated by the archangel on behalf of God. In other words, God actually handed down the Quran to man through the archangel Gabriel, and therefore it can never ever be changed. So no matter what Sam Solomon and these other people might want to do, and I'm sure there are even Muslims out there who'd like to change the Quran, they can't. And if they try, they will be branded as heretics or apostates, and they will be killed. It's that simple. That's why we have this problem. So how can we deal with an ideology that demands death for anyone who even tries to revise it?
Revise it, criticize it, or leave it.
Yes, we just can't. We can't deal with that.
Before we go on to this, because this is a pet subject I know of both of us, can I just go back to what you were saying about UPS, that they've lost their way?
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised to hear that they want to go into politics. I don't think they've got the following to do it, and it was a real surprise to me. A Brit first had done it, but they've done it after years of hitting the pavement and doing lots of propaganda. I wonder why UPS, like you said, didn't become the face of that strength to the... You know, like we've got so many people that are fighting mosques going up in their neighbourhoods that could really use the support of UPS and their means of communications and what they do really well. And I'm surprised that they're not doing that, that they're choosing to go down a political route, when you would have to say that none of them really, you wouldn't think politics when you thought of those guys.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
That's precisely it. And, you know, when they announced that, I know I got calls from a lot of people who were, frankly, they were sniggering, because it was such an outlandish and outrageous idea that it was just beyond funny. They don't seem to understand their position in the movement. They don't really understand what they could be doing as an adjunct to the movement. They are thrashing around, shall we do this? Well, let's try that. And you know the problem I see? They're young guys who they're not really mature enough yet to understand how the world works. They think that the world can be bent to their will simply by getting up and standing up and shouting out, I want you to do this. It doesn't work that way. And politics is a very, very difficult business to get into. You know, I got dragged into this against my will. I didn't really want to be a politician. And, in fact, after the last election, I even stated quite clearly that's the first and last time I ever stand. But circumstances have pushed me to the stage where I've had to declare now that I'm going to stand again, because now that Turnbull has stolen our leadership, I can't stand by and let that happen. So I find it rather, you know, it's sad in a way that UPF can't understand the situation that they're in, nor can they come up with a way to contribute most positively to the movement. And I think if they did, and if they understood their role, and they do have a role to play, I believe, but it's a role that they haven't found yet. You know, they're committed, they're dedicated, they're passionate, but that passion yes. needs to be directed somewhere, and they've lost direction. They don't have a direction.
I think that's also reflected in the leadership, you know, that they're going through this. Look, Great Aussie Patriot is a fabulous brand. Can I tell you, he represents the heart of a lot of people, and I think he is the voice of a lot of everyday Australians. And I think he needs to continue on being that voice. Same with UPF. I saw Beck Cottrell, and I actually really admired him as leader of UPF. I think he would bring a strength to him like the guys do over in UK. And I think there is a place for them. Definitely, as you're saying, there is a definite place for them in Australia.
There's not a definite place now. There could be if they find their way. They have to come up with a way to contribute to the movement in such a way that it's a positive contribution. I get the feeling that they are very negative. It's all about going out there and fighting Islam. But not, dare I say, intelligently. You know, they're young guys and they think that they can just go out there and bully their way through. They can't. It's never going to work, and they will never represent the ordinary Australians. And I disagree with you that they represent a part of Australia, but they don't. I believe that this neo-Nazi stance that they've taken, this bully boy, reminds too many people of the Nazis in their brown shirt days, and it's uncomfortable for us. And that's why I won't have anything to do with them, because I'm standing for election. I can't even be seen to be associated with people like that.
Well, they have to be relevant, and that's where what you're saying is you've got to find yourself your relevancy, and that's what any brand has to do. You know, they've got to be relevant to the marketplace. As a result of Sunday night, Reclaim Australia have become relevant because they're reflecting the hearts of mums and dads. Yes. Now UPS find their relevancy. There's enough. We do have that larrikin element in Australia, and I think I think Gap basically owns that stage. He really captured that element in Australia. He is the larrikin. UPS though need to find where they belong, and I agree with you. There is definitely a place for them. They just have to find it.
Yeah, it is. And they haven't found it yet, that's for sure. But this time, at least I hope there is, we are fast running out of time, not only in Australia but also on the show, so we better start packing up here. But do you have any final thoughts on all of this then, Monica?
I think we're moving into a new era. The media have stopped slating everyone as racist and every page as a hate page, and they've started to see, as a result of another killing, that there may be some truth to the fact that a radicalised person is just somebody who's following Muhammad, and that's the problem. The radicalisation, the step to becoming a radical Islamist is to actually believe and follow Muhammad. That's scary. It's scary for Muslims too, because Christians in general don't go around and do the hard yards of Christendom. Like, if you go and follow Jesus, you've got to go out there and cast out demons and heal the sick and create miracles and do all this kind of stuff. No,
I thought he was the only one that had to do that. We just had to follow the word of his, you know, the words that love thy fellow man and do unto others, etc. I understood Christianity was never that you had to go out and be militantly Christian. That's why I've never really liked the militant Christians.
I'm not going to go into that. What I'm saying is if you wanted to follow Jesus to the letter, what you'd end up being is somebody who contributed to society in a way that was profound. And if you wanted to follow...
There's many ways you can do that.
Yeah, hang on, but hang with me on this one. Just hang with me on this one. Mm. But if you wanted to follow Muhammad, to the same letter, you would end up becoming a terrorist and you would end up becoming a despot. That's the only thing, you know, if you listen to what his actual teachings are. And I'm talking about the second half, not the first half.
Yeah.
The second half, when he took over Saudi, when he took over Arabia and he became the ruler. And then he sent out his generals once he died, and they then created that expansion into Europe, and it took four crusades to drive them back into the Middle East. What we're seeing, that radicalization is just a war effort.
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to the radicals, they're just talking about being at war with the West.
Yeah.
They're being at war with the unbelievers. You know, they've taken on that warmonger mantle.
Well,
and that's the radicalization.
Saying. Yeah, I keep saying that 1400 years ago, Islam declared war on the West. They haven't stopped warring against us ever since. The war has waxed and waned, but ultimately it's always been waged against us because they believe that they are right, that they have the right to impose Islam on the whole world. And we don't think so. That's what it all comes down to, really.
We're the peace-loving mung beans. You know, we want our freedom, we want our democracy, and that sits in total juxtaposition to Islam. And that's why I've had a lot of people ask me why I'm against Islam, and it's simply for that reason.
Yeah.
It's just the values of Islam are just so against, they're countercultural to the whole West. Right. If it was a merger between two companies, I would be saying, in my professional opinion, having, you know, done a lot of it, this merger should not take place.
Absolutely. Mon, thank you very much for coming on the show once more, and you've been a great guest. And as usual, we've touched on a lot of subjects that I'm sure you and I are going to talk about offline as well. But I hope that our listeners have enjoyed the show, and we'll be back next week. I'm trying very hard to get a very special guest on, Nikolai Semmels.
Oh, that would be...
He's a hard man to catch because he's been very, very busy, and I've tried calling him a couple of times, but I'm not getting anywhere fast. However, he did email me just recently and say that he does want to be on the show, so cross fingers, and please, if you know Nikolai, tell him that we're very, very keen to get him on the show. So thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mike.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt, signing off. Until next time. And here's a message to Islam. You can try to deny us our freedoms and our rights. You can try to impose your idiotic ideology on us, but you never will, because we believe in freedom, and we will fight you to your death.